Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KALW's weekly magazine of most things culturally considered. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. A jam-packed hour for you once again on Open Air. This week you'll be hearing about the San Francisco trolley dances with the originator of that program, Kim Epifilano. Also, down in Silicon Valley, TheaterWorks is presenting the extraordinary production of Sweeney Todd. Mindy Lim, who portrays Joanna, will be talking with us. Dan Demers of the Hill Barn Theater is here, along with Elspeth Noble, who is one of the stars in The 39 Steps, directed by Hunt Burdick. We'll have a conversation with them as well. Plus, contributing producer Ben Trefney of KALW News will talk about Syria and Jazz, a special program that's at the Freight and Salvage. Do stay with us. Tonight is opening night for the Hill Barn Theater's presentation of the Tony Award-winning Broadway comedy, The 39 Steps, being directed by Hunt Burdick, and running through the 2nd of November. Here to talk about that production is Executive Artistic Director Daniel Demers, who was last on our airwaves talking about the August production of Funny Girl at Hill Barn. He's also, Dan brings a wealth of talent and creative chops to the Hill Barn Theater, in addition to being a technical and creative force for the Hill Barn. He's graced the stages in front of the spotlight and in full grease paint as Max Bialystock and the producers, and as King Arthur and Spamalot. Dan, welcome back to Open Air.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
He's joined by one of the actresses one of the four actors who is portrayed in the production of The 39 Steps, Elspeth Noble, a UK native. She studied at the Edinburgh University. Happy to have Elspeth here to talk about her role in The 39 Steps. Welcome.
Thanks so much. Great to be here.
Sure. So let's get people on board with the production itself. Remind us of what The 39 Steps is all about, Dan.
So The 39 Steps comes from the Hitchcock film, and this the play is actually a comedic spoof of that movie. And it's a wild comedy with only four actors who play roughly about 150 characters in the span of 2 hours.
That's true.
Not including an intermission.
Oh, my gosh.
And,
it's hard work.
It's a lot of work, but it's, you know.
Hilarity ensues.
It sure does, especially with someone like Hunt Burdick at the helm. It's just, it's nonstop action and comedy the whole time.
What are the differences between the 39 Steps play and the more familiar Hitchcock version from 1935?
Well, there's actually two movies, so it most resembles the second film that he did, and it takes the guts or the elements of that movie, and then they took it over the line and then kept the elements but turned all of those, you know, the meat and potatoes, they turned it into a cake. And it's this wild, crazy, comedy that basically plays off of the realism of these wonderful characters and kind of takes their meaning and extrapolates them and blows them up a little bit more so they're a little larger than life. You know, you've got, you know, colloquialisms and character-driven action that's, you know, unique for the areas. It's England, Scotland, the Highlands, part of Scotland, and I think there's a couple other places too.
Yeah, we dip and dive in and out of many, many UK dialects, so that's a lot of fun.
So, so it's just taking that the baseline of the movie that everyone either knows or doesn't, but and then kind of blowing it up into this wild comedy.
It kind of turns the spy genre on its head.
Yes,
almost.
It does.
It sure does.
Right.
Back to front and inside out.
Yeah.
So, Elle, let's talk about the characters that you play.
Sure. Well, I play three characters, so any...
A mere three characters.
A mere three characters. And I was about to say any female you see on the stage will be me, but that's not true. There are many
other
females portrayed, just not by me. So the first character that I play is a German spy. Her name is Annabella Schmidt, and she comes to the forefront of the plot and really sets up what is going to unfold for the rest of the play. Lots of mystery and intrigue and controlled panic, I think, is probably a good way of putting it. So that's Annabella Schmidt. She disappears fairly early on.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately.
Unfortunately. It's very sad. and then the next character that I jump onto the stage as is Margaret, who is Scottish. And we like to think of her as pretty in her own way, a little bit eccentric, perhaps a hag in the making, entirely quirky and wonderful. Mm-hmm. And she has a rather interesting husband, too. And she's another stage on the journey of the main character as the plot unfolds. And then the last character I play is Pamela, and she is the classic English rose, entirely charming, but a little bit unsettled with the circumstances in which she finds herself.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. All right. And the other characters, I should ask Hunt Burdick this question. How does he get these actors to portray all of these different roles? Maybe you've had some insight into that.
Yeah. So when Hunt and I sat down and started casting the show, we knew that it was going to be a large challenge to find these two additional characters, you know, four total, but the two characters that are going to be the hardest were labeled the clowns, because these two characters, who are played by Ross Neuenfeld and Russell Ward, they're one of the hardest tracks to play, because they change characters instantaneously on stage immediately. So we knew that not only the chemistry of the four had to be locked in together, but really their chemistry had to be like spot on.
And they're phenomenal.
They are phenomenal. They're a phenomenal group of guys.
Beyond phenomenal.
And,
yeah.
They really have taken these roles on just on their back, and they're just like, we're going to do
hilarious.
It. And they created their own their own little connection and bits that they work together.
So help me understand the Hitchcock element of this. I know that in this particular production, you spoof also some other Hitchcock movies, but how is the original Hitchcock? I don't usually think of screwball comedy in Hitchcock.
So without the common thread through Hitchcock is always that suspenseful thriller element, you know, the identity, the spy, all of those elements. And there are elements of the show where there is no comedy, but it's that kind of traditional Hitchcock mystery spy thread that is woven so well through all of his stuff, you know, the Psycho, 39 Steps and all the other ones that he's done. There's that common mystery spy thread that kind of threads it through. And there are moments in the show where there really are no funny moments. It's just that gritty Hitchcock streamline. And so anyone who's a fan of Hitchcock will come and see and go, oh my gosh, you know, this is totally Hitchcock, but different. And keeping with his tradition, there are moments where he is seen on stage. we've kept that going to honor him. And
is that one of the actors portraying or a different person?
No. I can't tell you. You just have to wait and see. But no, he is
the
definitely
suspense
part.
Is killing me.
Right. So he's definitely part of the show as well. But yeah, there are very key, solid elements that have translated in the films that are in the stage version as well.
Neat. Elle, is this your first time performing in the 39 Steps production of it?
It is, yes. And it's phenomenal. My parents went to see it in London, and they didn't stop raving about it. And when they heard that it was coming up at the Hillbarn, I was in a show earlier this year, Lend Me a Tenor. That was my first show at the Hillbarn. And they came to see that, and they thought that was fabulous. And when they heard 39 Steps was coming up, they're like, you have to audition. So I went for it. There's a novel before the Hitchcock film by John Buchan, which I had read, which so it builds on Hitchcock builds on the novel, and the play builds on Hitchcock, and it's all a wonderful mixture. So I did know a little bit about the plot, but I've just been blown away with how much fun it's been. I mean, it's just... truly.
Yeah, and Brad Satterwhite plays the lead guy, Richard Hannay, who's basically the post in which the violent storm rotates around.
Yes. Yeah.
So, and he's great too. So
he is.
Yeah.
You'll find yourself, if you come and see the show, very much looking through his eyes and kind of getting mixed up in all kinds of crazy circumstances that a good, upright British man such as himself would never possibly hope to be landed in.
Yeah.
But he's there.
The Hill Barn Theater's production of The 39 Steps runs through November 2nd. Information at Hill Barn Theater, theatre.org. Dan, I want to ask you how this fits in with the current season of Hill Barn called A Season of Awakening.
So that's a great question. So the last time I was here, I talked about the quote that drove the season. It's by Mark Twain. The two most important days in your life are the day you're born and the day you find out why. And so that's kind of been the common thread through everything with that theme of awakening. So with this show, it's not as clear cut as, say, Funny Girl was or some of the other ones, but with this show, you have a single individual, Richard Hannay, who is bored with his life, and he sits there and he says this beautiful monologue in the beginning about it, just everything is lackluster and there's no magic and there's no this and there's no that, and he says, I'm going to go see a West End show to turn my life around. And that is when he meets Annabella Schmidt.
It's the catalyst
mm-hmm. that throws him and completely changes his life in all directions. So in that way, it kind of, he discovers a lot about himself. He finds the woman he, you know, marries and loves, and you know, in the end he achieves what he wants to, and we have that kind of awakening theme happen where he's now discovered himself and what he wants and who he is. So that's kind of how it ties together to the theme.
Mm-hmm. And then White Christmas is coming up.
Sure is.
Right on the tails of
it
that.
It sure is.
Very
and,
nice.
And it's going to be great.
Preparation's well underway, I'm sure.
Yes, it is.
Perhaps we'll have you back to talk about that.
That would be great. I'd love to.
Elspeth Noble, I wish you a fabulous run of the 39 Steps. I'm looking forward to catching this for my first time as well.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Dan Deemers, as always, a pleasure having you
Thank
here.
You so much, Dave.
On the theme of trolley, San Francisco Trolley Dances returns October 18th to 19th to take audiences out of the theater and into the streets to see some of the Bay Area's finest live performance in San Francisco's finest venue, the city itself. This year's events will feature 16 free site-specific performances along Muni's J Church line from 30th and Church Streets to Balboa Park Station. And here to talk about this year's presentation is the founder of, in 2004, of the whole schmeal, Kim Epifano. Kim is has a 25-year history and then some as a Bay Area director, choreographer, vocalist, and educator, as well as a solo performer. She founded Epiphany Productions in 1997 to assist in her work in sonic dance theater, a genre-bending blend of dance theater and vocalization, which dancers, musicians, aerialists, and actors work together to weave a story on stage. Welcome, Kim.
Hello.
Well, I do want to ask you about the trolley dances, of course, and how this first came to your idea of a presentation.
Well, it actually started in San Diego about 15 years ago, and I was invited to do some sites down there for their trolley dances. I was in a hotel room. I was by a river. I was on Chula Vista on the border near Mexico, and then I thought, well, this is perfect for San Francisco. We have the F line, the moving museum on wheels. This is the city we should do it in. So I decided to go for it. And now it's 11 years later and we're still doing it.
Uh-huh. Where have been different settings that you've used?
We've been all over now. We've done the F, the N, the J, the T, the M, the L. The F line got a little too small because of the trains are smaller. There's not as many trains. So I said, well, let's just go wherever we can. So now we've been all over the place. We've been to the Bayview Opera House. We've been to the Balboa Park Pool. We've been off of sides of buildings with aerial work. The Caltrain station, West Portal area.
So help me understand how this works, because everyone likes to complain about Muni not running on time. Are you interrupting the schedule by having these spontaneous dances happen? Come on, tell it.
Oh, no, no, no. Okay. We don't disturb anybody at any time. We go when the trains come, so they don't put on extra trains or we don't stop a train. I mean, it's a larger crowd to get on the train, but they already have their transfers before they get on. And the conductors know we're coming. And we actually like to say good things about Muni because they do work with us. They like what we're doing. And I think Muni does get a hard time. And I think we're a good thing. And they've been only helpful with us.
Well, tell us about that relationship. Was it hard or easy to get them involved in signing on to something this bizarre when it comes down to it?
Well, at
first, all San Francisco, after all.
I know it is San Francisco. Anything can happen. But at first, I think they thought, oh, you know, sure, we'll give you some placards on a bus. And then after I kept coming back year after year, then I realized, like, oh, let's work with this woman because she's not going away. And it's actually working really well. And we're very polite as far as paying attention to the rules they want us to follow. And they actually help us get sites sometimes. So it just sort of grew as we went along. There was no forcing anything. It's just sort of been a very nice evolution.
It's certainly a great way to introduce people who may not have otherwise been exposed to this kind of a live dance event.
Absolutely. And even people in the city we live in, going to places you haven't been in your own city, is fantastic. And then even tourists coming will go somewhere they would never go, you know, to the Excelsior. And the architecture you might see a dance in, or the kind of dance you might see, and the combination of things is, it's like a treasure hunt. That's what I call it.
So what inspires you for the actual choreography of a trolley dance?
Well, what I do is I find sites along a different line, this year being the J Church, and then I find a group either in the neighborhood or a professional group I've been looking at and see what would fit that particular site. So that's sort of how it works. And like sometimes it might be aerial work. Sometimes it might be postmodern dance. This year, it's a real wide variety. We have postmodern dance. We have Afro-Cuban style modern. We have hand balancing. We have Mission Flamenco. I'm doing a piece which is more postmodern and with text and script in it and live music. And then there's modern hip-hop mix. So it depends on the year and the sites that I get.
That's Kem Epifano, the founder of San Francisco Trolley Dances, getting underway October 18th and 19th. Each tour runs about 2 hours?
Yeah, give or take, depending on when the train comes and when we get on. This year, it feels like it's really a nice, compact trip. So, yeah, no more than 2 hours.
And you mentioned there's a fairly large group involved this year.
Well, we run it by tours. So there's 6 tours a day, starting at 11 o'clock on Saturday and Sunday. And they run every 45 minutes. The last one's at 2:45. So you come, you get a wristband for your tour. You don't have to pay. All you need is a transfer for the train. And then we take you on a journey with a tour guide. And that's sort of how it works. It's about 80 people on a tour. People can go on their own. We have bike maps. You can drive if you want. You can see one side and take the train when you want and then have a cup of coffee and try and catch the other side. So there's a lot of different ways you could do it because we only can fit so many people on a train.
Sure. It certainly breaks out of the shell of a theater in this way tremendously.
Well, that's what's so exciting about it as an artist also. It can so influence and challenge you and help you create something different than you've ever done before.
You mentioned some of the that each year is a little bit different in terms of the music that's involved. What's involved in the music this year?
This year, the flamenco music is the guitar and the singing and the clapping and the stomping. And that's incredible. I'm working with a guy called Cello Joe, Joey Chang. I've used him before when we were at City College in Evans Branch. And this is the second City College we've done, and he played with me there, and it was such a good fit that I brought him back in for this City College. And he plays cello and beatboxing, and he does a script that I've written for him. Neat. Out of the stories of the students.
We actually have a bit of his music. Let's hear a little bit of...
this rehearsal?
Yeah, a little bit of that, and then more with Kemba Fofana.
Okay.
Okay, this is G Blues.
Loopy Cello Joe, Joey Chang, and his magical cello as part of the musical accompaniment of San Francisco Trolley Dances this year. Nice stuff, and I imagine it gets a little heated after a while, too.
Yes, it's a long journey if you're performing in it. You know, it's a lot of shows and on hard surface.
Well, Kim, you've had a 25-plus year career here in the Bay Area. What's after Trolley Dances? What are you working on?
Oh, my goodness. I'm doing something called a Raw Residency at the Garage. I'll have a show up in March there. It's our home season. And then I do something called Baile en la Calle, the mural dances, on May 3rd. That will be at the murals in the Mission District down 24th Street in the Mission near Brava Theater, working with Presita Eyes and Brava Theater. This is our third year doing that. So I'll make a piece in front of one of the murals there, which has been really wonderful. That's another free event. And then, what do I do? I'm going to Cat Island to do a project on an island with a group of young theater students.
Fantastic. Now, you're not taking a pause, are you? Boy.
No, never.
Kim Epifano, the founder and director of San Francisco Trolley Dances. More information about those performances at epiphanydance.org, the 18th and 19th on a Muni car near you.
Coming right your way this weekend.
And for a wonderful interview with Kim Epifano, check out a very special interview at stanceondance.com and search for Kim Epifano. You will be enlightened and pleased. Kim, thanks so much for taking some time today.
Thanks for having us.
Of course.
Green finch and linnet bird, nightingale, blackbird, how is it you sing? Oh, can you jubilate sitting in cages, never taking wing? Outside the sky waits beckoning, beckoning.
Delightfully macabre Sweeney Todd, a lighter song, Green Finch and Linnet Bird, here sung by Lauren Molina. In one of the now several ways of presenting Stephen Sondheim's incredible musical Sweeney Todd, Playing Joanna in the TheaterWorks Silicon Valley production is my next guest, Mindy Lim. Mindy has appeared in several productions at TheaterWorks, including as Jane Fairfax and Emma, and as Gwendolyn in Being Earnest, for which she was nominated for a Bay Area Theater Critics Circle Award. Other accolades came her way down L.A. way for her portrayal of Maria in West Side Story, and closer to home here as Eva Perón in Evita at Contra Costa Musical Theater. Mindy, welcome to KLW in open air.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I was just wowed by this production at TheaterWorks, and I'm going to, you know, blatantly say, go, people, go to see Sweeney Todd at TheaterWorks. It's a terrific production. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. We're having a wonderful time.
Your first time performing the role of Joanna?
Yes, yes, oh, wow. It is my first time. And it's such a classic role. Most sopranos have worked on it for their entire career, but somehow I hadn't. So I had a crash course in Joanna before this audition. It's absolutely, it's a stunning, stunning role to get to sink my teeth into.
That's fantastic. Now, this TheaterWorks Silicon Valley production by artistic director Robert Kelly sets this during the Blitz in 1940s.
Yes.
London. But before we get into that setting, let's get people on board who are not familiar with Sweeney Todd, the demon barber of Fleet Street. And can you offer us a brief synopsis of this wonderfully macabre thing? I know how appropriate for October, too.
Absolutely. Oh, it's perfect for Halloween. I love it. So Sweeney Todd is a barber. And, you know, in the old days, they actually used a razor. There were no safety razors. And the idea is that Sweeney has been exiled to Australia for about 15 years, wrongfully exiled by a completely corrupt judge. And he comes back to exact his revenge. And in doing so, goes on something of a murderous rampage. And one of the things that is so exquisite about how the story has been crafted is that audience members will walk out on a regular basis saying, oh my God, I can't believe that I was sitting in my chair rooting for him to kill this guy. So it is a chilling, beautiful, aching, soaring score, and it will keep you on the edge of your seat.
I mentioned early on that there have been several ways of producing this, from full-on operatic productions, which I believe is going to be done at San Francisco Opera next year, to a more intimate version, which we heard Lauren Molina sing, in which the performers are actually the pit orchestra. They're
yes.
playing instrument, if not multiple instruments, on stage and as characters. But
yeah.
This production takes it back to more of the original Broadway version with a full pit orchestra.
Right. Yes. We have a gorgeous 9-piece orchestra that is just so lush and so beautiful.
And I mentioned being set in 1940s Blitz London. How does that work?
Yeah. Out? So Robert Kelly, our director, who is wonderful, his vision is that during the Blitz, there's a troupe of actors that's putting on Sweeney Todd. And there was a period in the Blitz where London actually got bombed, I believe, for something like, I want to say, 50-some-odd nights in a row. And we are running and we're escaping out of that down into a subway station. And historically, there were actually times when people would just start entertaining each other in the subway stations just to get, whether they had to rehearse or perform or whether it was just to keep each other's spirits up. And they were used as bomb shelters. So we are performing Sweeney Todd in the subway to keep everyone's spirits up. And we're going down into the audience and whatnot. And those air raid sirens keep going off through the production at moments that I think are really well plotted. And so there's this added level of urgency and emergency.
Neat. We talked briefly about the plot, but it's actually Mrs. Lovett who comes up with the idea of making these meat pies after Sweeney does away with someone who is trying to blackmail him.
Yes. They're wondering where to put the body. Are we going to dump it in the river? Are we going to...
Well, let's hear from the classic Broadway production with Len Carew and Angela Lansbury as Mrs. Lovett. Have a Little Priest, and then more with Mindy Lim.
Heavenly. Not as hearty as bishop, perhaps, but then not as bland as curate, either.
Good for business, too. Always leaves you wanting more. Trouble is, we only get it on Sundays. Lawyer's rather nice.
If it's for a price,
Order something else, though, to follow, since no one should swallow it twice.
Have you any Dean?
No, but if you're British and loyal, you might enjoy Royal Marine. Anyway, it's clean, though of course it tastes of wherever it's been.
Is that squire on the fire?
Mercy no, sir, look closer, you'll notice it's grosser.
Looks thicker, more like thicker.
No, it has to be grosser, it's green.
The history of the world, my love.
Save a lot of grapes, do a lot of relatives favors.
Is those below serving those up above?
Everybody shaves, so there should be plenty of flavors.
How gratifying for once to know that those above will serve those down below.
Now let me sing. We've got a tinker.
No, no. Something pinker.
Taylor.
Paler.
Butler.
Sutler.
Potter.
Hotter.
Locksmith. Lovely bit of clock.
Maybe for a lock.
Then again the sweep, if you want it cheap and you like it dark. Try the financier, pick up his career.
That looks pretty rank.
Well, he drank, it's a bank cashier. Last one really sold, wasn't quite so old.
Have you any Beetle?
Next week, so I'm told. Beetle isn't bad till you smell it and notice how well it's been greased. Stick to priest. Now, this might be a bit stringy, but then, of course, it's our fiddle player.
No, no. This isn't fiddle player, it's piccolo player.
How can you tell?
It's piping hot.
Then blow on it first.
The history of the world, my sweet.
Oh, Mr. Todd, oh, Mr. Todd, what does it tell?
Is who gets eaten and who gets to eat.
And Mr. Todd, too, Mr. Todd, who gets to sell.
But fortunately, it's all so clear that everybody goes down well with beer.
Since marine doesn't appeal to you, how about rear admiral?
Too salty. I prefer general.
With or without his privates?
What is that?
It's fop, finest in the shop. And we have some shepherd's pie peppered with actual shepherd on top. And I've just begun. He's a politician so oily, it's served with a doily of one.
Put it on a bun. Well, you never know if it's going to run.
Trail the fryer, fry the dryer.
No, the clergy is really too coarse and too mealy. Yes, and always arrives overdone. I'll come again when you have judge on the menu. Have charity towards the world, my pet.
Yes, yes, I know, Mama.
We'll take the customers that we can get.
High born and low, Mama.
We'll not discriminate great from small. No, we'll serve it.
Incredible Angela Lansbury and Len Carreyrou from the original LP, original cast recordings from my personal library of Sweeney Todd, book by Hugh Wheeler, music by Stephen Sondheim. Good afternoon. Once again, I'm David Latulippe. Joining me now is Mindy Lim, who's portraying Joanna in the Theater Works production down in Mountain View.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I should mention that in this production, Tori Ross is the incredible Mrs. Lovett. She does such a wonderful portrayal of this role.
Oh, she's fantastic.
And David Studwell as Sweeney Todd as well.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic assembly and just really beautifully presented. This is just an amazing musical, and you guys should be very pleased at what's coming out of it.
Thank you.
So when Mindy is not performing, you run Mindy Lim Studios. Tell us a little bit about Mindy Lim Studios.
I do. It is a private studio where I provide training for all ages in musical theater. I particularly specialize in vocal technique, ranging everywhere from operatic to pop, rock, belt, any form of Broadway you want. And I also do career mentorship, helping people get out of their own way of their career.
I think you need to leave a card for me right now, please. So what's happening after Sweeney Todd for you?
You know, at the moment, I'm really only letting myself do two shows a year because I want to be there for my studio.
Oh, good for you.
And so I'm looking at a few auditions, which I don't talk about until I book. There are a few things on the horizon that I'm excited about. And I'm just going to dig right back in with my students.
Mindy Lim portraying Joanna now through the 2nd of November in TheaterWorks Silicon Valley's production of Stephen Sondheim's Sweeney Todd. A wonderful choice for the month of October. You will have a thoroughly enjoyable evening of musical theater if you manage to go. Go to theaterworks.org, theater, T-H-E-A-T-R-E, works.org. Mindy, thanks so much for taking some time.
Absolutely. Thank you.
In addition to Mindy, I mentioned that David Studwell is Sweeney Todd. Tori Ross, a KALW fan. Hope you're listening, Tori. Is Mrs. Lovett. Spencer Keeley as Toby. Mia Friesen Jimenez as the beggar woman. Jack Mosbacher. Hey, Jack, as Anthony. Once again, directed by the artistic director of TheaterWorks Silicon Valley, Robert Kelly. Do stay with us. A special segment by contributing producer Ben Trefney of KALW News on the on jazz and Syria. Since, let me get this right. The world has been watching armed conflict escalate in Syria for years now, and this Friday, the Bay Area will have a chance to consider the war-torn country in a different way by how it sounds. Classical Syrian music will get an American interpretation at the Freight and Salvage in Berkeley on Friday. The Jazz in Syria Quintet will perform in a concert and discussion being hosted by award-winning international journalist Reese Ehrlich, who also produces the Jazz Perspective segments, sometimes heard on KALW's News Cross Currents. Eric dropped by the studio the other day with quintet members Vince Delgado and Coralie Russo, they spoke with Ben Trefney about Syria's rich musical history and the impact of the Civil War.
Could you tell me about this show? What motivated you to do this show?
Well, I came back from Northern Iraq covering it for various public radio stations and the Global Post, and I talked with my old buddy pianist Larry Vukovich, and we both wanted to do something to kind of inspire people here about not be so pessimistic about developments over there. And we came up with this idea of jazz in Syria, of playing jazz tunes on Arabic instruments and taking classical Arabic music and rearranging it in a jazz mode with jazz improvisation.
Is this something that happens generally, to have jazz?
To my knowledge, it happens nowhere else. This is a unique evening as far as I've been able to figure out. So I'll talk about a bit about the musical history in Syria and what's going on politically with the Civil War. The musicians will play two sets of the music I just described.
Well, I think that we should jump right into listening to one of the songs. And so this is one called Hejaz City. Well, Reese, tell me about some of the roots then that Jazz in Syria Quintet, the Jazz in Syria Quintet, is going to be coming out of, the roots of this music.
Well, the Damascus and Syria in general have a very developed music history, a very exciting one. Of course, since the uprising and the Civil War, there's not a lot of nightlife in Damascus, let's just put it that way. So what we're trying to do is take some classical Syrian songs and new compositions in Arabic style and make them accessible to people here. Maybe people have never heard Arabic music before, but if you hear recognizable tune on the oud, for example, or played on keyboards or violin, it's going to be an exciting experience.
Mm-hmm. And what do the roots of this music go back to? I mean, are the songs that you guys are playing and improvising out of, do these go back centuries, or how far back?
It's all of it.
Vince Delgado?
It's all of it. It's some songs that are really old. Some songs actually came from Spain when the Jews and the Arabs were kicked out of Spain.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the material that was happening there, like the golden era, whatever you want to call it, came across North America and went to Syria. And Aleppo at that time was the big music center. And those songs still exist.
When was that?
That was...
It would be the late 1400s when Columbus discovered the New World. That was on the backs of the Arabs, Muslims, and the Jews who were had their property confiscated by the king and queen of Spain.
To pay for the journey.
We all owe it to the folks who got expelled.
Let's speak with Coralie Russo now, who's playing the oud. What is it that draws you to this music and drew you initially 25 years ago when you started playing this?
Well, it was, I would have to admit, it was dancing. I got in through going to a belly dance class, and I was just transfixed by the music. And I had no prior training on any musical instrument, but I had a violin that I had picked up at a pawn shop because I was fascinated by the violin, and I started playing along with my records. And one thing led to another, and then there was a little band, and we were playing for dancers. And then the more you get into something, the more you learn. And I picked up an oud at that point. And this was at a time when there weren't any ouds available. It was a huge oud. It was from Syria, too, and they make big ouds there.
Well, and let's describe, just for people who don't have an oud in front of them or haven't seen one.
Well, if you know what
so
a lute, most everybody knows what a lute is, and this is a lute. As a matter of fact, it's the same word, laout.
Well, it's sort of, it's sort of like pear-shaped in a way, like as compared to, say, a round, like a mandolin or something like that.
It's a large mandolin.
It's a little bit longer, yeah. So you liked to dance.
I did. I mean, that was in my past. I mean, I like to dance, but I don't perform the dance anymore. But I still do play dance music for dancers, you know, in certain situations, and it's fun. And we play Greek music, and I've played Bulgarian music, and I play a lot of Turkish music. And mostly of my repertoire is Arabic.
Okay. Well, I'm really interested to hear. I mean, you brought some instruments, and so I'd like to hear a little taste of you on oud, Coralie, and you on the rick.
Yeah.
Is that what it's called there, Vince?
Yeah, very good.
Thank you. So, go ahead, and if you don't mind playing a little something.
Shall we back up from this stuff?
Yeah, so let me just...
Okay, we're going to play a tune. We're not going to tell you the name of it because...
Everybody knows what it is.
You're going to know what it is, I think.
1, 2, 3, 4...
All right, Coralie Russo on the oud and Vince Delgado on the rick. They are part of the Jazz in Syria Quintet, which will be playing on Friday night at the Freight and Salvage in Berkeley.
That was Poinciana, by the way.
Yeah, you know, I've heard that song. But I was going to say, you know,
do you want to really?
You said that everybody would be able to recognize it. I'm sure that they could at KCSM. I'm not.
Yeah,
yeah,
really. You know, maybe. You're jazz.
It's like, I know it's on the tip of my tongue.
I should have said that because not everybody listens to jazz.
Yes, yeah. Ahmad Jamal, he actually popularized it.
Yeah, if you can find a version on piano by Ahmad Jamal and crossfade it with this.
Oh, there's one on
it would really work.
That's a fantastic idea.
Because it's like his number one favorite tune that he made.
His signature, then.
Yeah, his signature song. Yeah.
Were you guys in the same key as the piano version?
No.
We might have to pitch shift there.
In the same key as a fake book.
Right.
So I don't know if that's right or not. And, but Larry Vukovic will be playing the piano, and Eric Golub will be on the violin, and Mike Halsey on bass. So we'll have a full combo there.
Mm-hmm. Reese, can you tell me then, how has culture changed then? You mentioned that in Damascus there's not a whole lot of nightlife these days, but, you know, what is the scene then in Damascus, in Syria, culturally now?
Well, the last time I was there, it's definitely a city at war. I've been going to Damascus since 2002, and of course the situation has changed quite drastically. So at night, or not, and taking classical Arabic music and rearranging it in a jazz mode with jazz improvisation.
Is this something that happens generally, to have jazz?
To my knowledge, it happens nowhere else. This is a unique evening as far as I've been able to figure out. So I'll talk about a bit about the musical history in Syria and what's going on politically with the civil war. The musicians will play two sets of the music I just described.
Well, I think that we should jump right into listening music of Syria in a jazz mode. This is Belgrade Blues. So, Reese, do you have final thoughts about the music of Syria and the exposure that we can have then to the culture of Syria through a show like this, and where people could go elsewhere to really try to understand the culture more than what they're seeing in the headlines?
Well, I think a lot of people are pretty pessimistic when they read the news. Every day seems to bring more bad news from Iraq and Syria and the Islamic State and all that. This is a chance to be a little bit more upbeat and a little bit more optimistic. I think in the short run, there are going to continue to be a lot of problems in the region. As a foreign reporter, I've seen it firsthand. But in the medium run, in the long run, I don't think the Islamic State is going to succeed. I think they're going to implode from their harsh policies. And I think the culture of Syria and of the region is going to reassert itself. And that's what we're emphasizing on Friday night, which is the growth, the positive nature of the culture that crosses borders. And even if you know nothing about Arabic music, you're going to love what you hear on Friday.
thanks again to Ben Trefney, and apologies for those technical difficulties in that presentation of our Jazz and Syria segment. Ben was talking with Reese Ehrlich about Ehrlich's new book called Inside Syria, The Backstory of Their Civil War, and What the World Can Expect. You also heard from percussionist Vince Delgado and oud player Coralie Russo, part of the Jazz and Syria Quintet performing Friday night at the Freight and Salvage in Berkeley. Details are at our website, kalw.org, or at the Freight's, thefreight.org. Among the many other cultural events happening here this weekend, the California Bach Society presents music from the elegant court of Louis XIV at Versailles. Director Paul Flight leads the 30-voice orchestra, and soloists, 30-voice chamber chorus, a Baroque orchestra, and vocal soloists in Dumont's richly textured Magnificat, de Lalande's lively Cantate Domino, and Charpentier's beautiful Requiem Mass. To finish things out here on Open Air on a calmer moment, let's hear some music of Henri Dumont that you can hear again from the California Bach Society this weekend.
Thank you.
music of Henri Dumont, the Magnificat, to be performed this weekend by the California Bach Society under the direction of Paul Flight. Information about that concert at the Cal Bach website, calbach.org. I'm David Latulippe. You've been listening to Open Air for Thursday, the 16th of October, 2014. Our programs are archived at kalw.org. It's there you can search for any of the number of fine performing artists that have performed or been heard here on Open Air. You can also send me an email, david@kalw.org. If you have a feature that you'd like to suggest or a particular local performing arts organization, david@kalw.org. My thanks, as always, to producer Neil Swinkles for helping produce Open Air. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next week at the same time. An hour of news from the BBC is coming up next.